Chapter 9. Flying Visit. It was January 1949, the start of the new year, when I flew to London with Mother to see Mrs. Cullis. We stayed just one day, that was all. Yet even in the space of a few hours, my entire life was changed. We arrived at Northolt at 11 o'clock on a bright, cold Saturday morning. Dr. Warnance was there to meet us and lifted me onto his shoulder and into a waiting taxi. I didn't like travelling on a person's back. It made me feel foolish. I would much rather have crawled to the taxi. As we were driven through London to the Middlesex Hospital, I looked out of the window at the crowds outside the huge shop windows. The ceaseless stream of red buses, motor cars and cyclists, all converging into one massive noise and motion. I saw the tall grey buildings outlined against the smoke-blue sky. Finally, the car stopped outside a huge stone building with lots of steps leading up to it. This was the Middlesex Hospital, my destination. We went to a little consulting room to wait for Mrs. Cullis. Dr. Warnance smiled as he helped me into a chair. "Scared?" he asked me. I shook my head just to give myself courage. "You are, you know," he continued, looking at me. "You're scared stiff, but you're too stubborn to admit it, even to yourself. That's good." Mother was perfect. She sat calmly, looking through some magazines that were on the table. Even though this was the first time she had ever been outside Dublin. Suddenly, the door behind me opened. I looked round and saw that a man and woman had come into the room. I was sure that the woman was Mrs. Cullis. "Sorry I'm late," she said to us, sitting on the edge of the desk and lighting a cigarette. For a few moments, she took no notice of me and just sat chatting about things like the weather and the cost of cigarettes. Then she extinguished her cigarette, slid off the desk, and walked over to me. "I was just letting some of your tension escape, Christy," she said, smiling. "How old are you now?" she asked me. And when Mother attempted to tell her my age, she held up her hand and said politely, "Let Christy tell me himself, just for fun." I managed to grunt that I was 18. "18," said Mrs. Cullis. 18 years a cripple is quite enough for anyone. Don't you think it's time you did something about it?" I nodded my head in agreement. "Yes, so do I," she said. "Well then, let's see if we can make anything of you." Then she pointed to the man she had come in with. He was young, with sandy hair and a thin, pleasant face. "This is Mr. Gallagher," said Mrs. Cullis as he came over. "One of our staff." Later we became very good friends, Mr. Gallagher and I. He helped a great deal in my struggle, and his name to me will always be synonymous with friendliness and understanding. Mrs. Cullis examined me, helped by Dr. Warnance and Mr. Gallagher. I didn't understand what they were talking about most of the time. I caught words like cerebrum, basal ganglia, uncoordination, and many other mystic-sounding expressions. When the examination was over, Mr. Gallagher helped me to put on my clothes again. After that, the four of them, Mrs. Cullis, Dr. Warnance, Mr. Gallagher and Mother, went to the corner of the room to speak among themselves for a while. It was as if I were on trial for my life. At last, Mrs. Cullis came across the room, slowly, and sat down on the couch beside me. "Well, Christy," she said, "you haven't come to London in vain. I can find no reason why you shouldn't be cured eventually." My heart gave a leap of pure joy. I could be cured. What else mattered now? "Yes," continued Mrs. Cullis, "you can be cured if you are prepared to do lots of really hard work over the next few years. But you must first make a big sacrifice. You must never use your left foot again." My left foot? But that meant everything to me. It was my only way of communicating with the outside world. "Yes, I know it's tough," she said, interpreting my thoughts. It's a tremendous sacrifice, but it's the only way out. There are no shortcuts. If you continue to use your left foot, you may become a great artist or writer with it, but you'll never be cured. Will you promise never to use your left foot again? I understood what she said. It was going to be an all-out battle from now on, and if I wanted to win it, I must pay a big price to win a bigger gain. I will, I said to Mrs. Cullis, and they were the clearest words I had ever spoken. She took my hand and pressed it, her eyes alight. Good boy. It's not going to be easy, but the first step has been taken. The rest depends on you. At that moment, I did not know why I had to stop using my left foot in order to receive treatment. But Mrs. Collis explained that, although the use of my foot was good for me mentally, it was bad for me physically. As long as I could make myself understood by using it, I would never think of trying to use my hands. If I kept my promise and cut off my left foot, then I'd start a new life, a complete new mode of thinking and acting, and that in itself would be something worth any sacrifice. We flew back to Dublin that night, and Dr. Collis met us and drove us home in his car. It seemed that Mrs. Collis had already got in touch with him by phone, and he was delighted with her good news. He told me that he had recently opened a cerebral palsy clinic in Merrion Street, Dublin. I would start attending it on the following Monday morning when the ambulance came to collect me. There's nothing you can't conquer, Christy, he said to me, putting his hand on my shoulder. And remember, I'm with you all the way. But I knew then that my first task was to conquer myself, and that the real battle was only beginning.